That continue our discussion. We've been talking with Robert Appel. Robert was the executive director of the Vermont Human Rights Commission. We're talking about a piece he wrote over the weekend talking about police bias. And let's take another couple of calls here. Let's go to Washington. Andrew, good morning. How are you?
Good. Very well, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. My brother-in-law is a police officer down just out Springfield, Mass., which incidentally is many of those drug arrests that you were speaking about earlier in the show, coming up through into Vermont. You always hear the names from Holyoke and Chicopee and Springfield, which is exactly where he's a police officer. So his nightly shift is vastly different than the shift of an officer here in Vermont. And this is a conversation that I have with him on a regular basis because I really try to understand both sides. And my viewpoint on it is this, is Mark, you and I and many of the other general citizens, in their daily work, you might be faced with a few split-second decisions. And sometimes the law of averages is going to say you're going to make the wrong decision. But in our job, it's not a life or death situation. When it comes to a police officer, they're faced with those decisions on such a higher rate that, again, the law of averages is going to say they're going to make more mistakes. I don't think that that's necessarily influenced by bias as it is just the law of averages, and people do make mistakes. And, you know, I would much rather have him make maybe a wrong mistake and do something incorrectly in his job and be able to make it home to my sister and my niece and my nephew than be sitting in his cruiser and be blown away by someone who has a chip on their shoulder about something else.
Right. Let me have him comment. Thank you, Andrew. I appreciate your call.
You. Yeah, thank you, Andrew. I mean, I can't argue your point in any fashion. Yes, officers are required to make split-second decisions. They sign up for that work. They're trained for that work. They're human like the rest of us. They make mistakes. When we make mistakes, we're held to account. When they make mistakes, they should be held to account as well. I know that sounds somewhat cold-hearted, and I have sympathy for you, your sister, and your niece's nephews. But at the same time, you know, I am a believer in equal justice under the law, and I believe that we all need to be held to the same high standards of conduct.
Let's go to Middlesex. Travin, good morning.
Yeah, an important conversation. I must thank Robert for provoking it. I'm going to ask a question of Robert and your listeners about whether or not you think the reaction back in October of the Vermont Police Chiefs Association and the Vermont Troopers Association, their condemnation of the invitation on the part of Goddard College students to one of the Goddard student graduates, Mumia Abu-Jamal, speaking at a graduation exercise. And just a footnote on that, I mean, Mumia was, he is in jail, allegedly for having killed a police officer in the early 1980s. I think most people who studied the case realize that he was never given a fair trial. So I think we don't really know what happened. But does that suggest some kind of institutional prejudice on the part of Vermont police associations and the troopers for them to have condemned his speaking at that graduation and having participated in demonstrations against the college?
Travin, let me have him just hang on for a second. Travin, thank you for your call. Let me take a moment to remind you about our good friends at Green Mountain Access. If you're looking for an outstanding local internet service provider, make it our friends at gmavt.net. They can be reached toll-free at 1-888-321-0815. And again, on the web, gmavt.net.
Travin, interesting question you raise. I think it's important for the listeners to understand that Mumia Abu-Jamal was not in Plainfield giving an address. He t- taped an address that was played at a graduation at the request of the graduates. You know, the police community is a very tight-knit community, and if you're involved in any way with taking an officer out, it's devastating to that community, and they have very strong feelings about, in any way, honoring anyone who had anything to do with such an act. I know a little about his case. I know that he was on death row for many, many years, and your questions about whether he received a fair trial resulted in a resentencing, and he's now doing life without parole. I'm a believer in free speech. Obviously, I'm here talking about a relatively provocative topic, thanks to Mark's open-mindedness, as well as Mr. Squires, who's quite willing to allow a wide breadth of conversations on the station, including your program, Travin.
So you'd still be on if he objected, by the way.
Oh, I know. You know, my conversations with Ken Lee, we certainly don't always agree, but he is open to a wide range of opinion, which yep. is, to me, what community dialogue and good citizenship is all about. I don't think you have to look any further than the head of the Police Benevolent Association in New York City, this fellow Patrick Lynch, who was asking officers to sign statements saying they don't want Mayor de Blasio to come to their funeral should they be dying in the line of duty, which unfortunately came to pass over this weekend. You know, it's a very difficult job. I've said that many times. But at the same time, we need to exert control over officers. And harking back to community input reminds me of the decision in Montpelier not to buy tasers. And Mark's probably familiar with this. There was the chief in Montpelier, Tony Fakos, like many other officers, promoted the idea of tasers for his officers. Primarily, and a lot of what I hear from chiefs is, it's safer for the officers, it reduces workers' comp claims, and there's an argument that it's safer for suspects as well. Well, rather than go out and just purchase the equipment, Tony had the wisdom to go to the city council and ask for their input, and city council convened a community study group that spent weeks, if not months, taking all points of view and issued a very comprehensive report, which ended up recommending that the city does not need tasers, and I think the city council didn't even need to take a vote. I think the chief withdrew the request. And mm-hmm. To me, that's community policing at its best. And I know Burlington at this point is engaging in something called knock and talk instead of knock and enter, you know, executing search warrants. I think it's very important for police to have positive relations with all segments of the community, and I think more enlightened law enforcement executives are moving in that direction. They're getting officers out of cars, onto the street, building relationships, so you don't have this us and them dynamic where people are more prone to overreact on both sides. Where there's a relationship, I guess I said this in 7 days over in the last article around police body cameras. No one wants to look like an ass on camera, or very few people who are either not psychotic or totally impaired. So I think that relationship and knowing that there's outside scrutiny and review tends to de-escalate. So I think all of that's a positive direction for law enforcement around the country and here in Vermont. I think it's tougher for the state police because the nature of their work is more patrol and calls for service out into the rural areas. But, you know, municipal departments certainly have the opportunity to build those relationships.
Let's go to Waterbury. Tom, good morning.
Good morning, and thank you, Robert, for all the work that you do.
Well, thank you.
You know, there's two points I'd like to raise. One is that I've done a lot of research in this area, and I'm very critical of police, and not only police, but also correctional institutions. There's a story that happened out in September where a decision was handed down by an administrative judge where they transferred a mentally ill person into solitary confinement. The decision was critical of six officers that were doing the transfer because the prisoner was beaten and in this transfer to put them into solitary confinement. And the decision was to the recommendation was to fire these officers. And she noted in the decision, I think that the guy's name was Horton, that she noted in the decision that one of the six officers had only been in the position for 6 months and made the statement that this is how quickly people acclimate to the culture of policing and correctional work. So there is a psychological dynamic here, and there is a culture of this sort of activity. That being said, I'm also very vocal in indicating that the public should take responsibility for this. As you pointed out, Robert, the Constitution of Vermont says that the people have the right to oversee the police. Now, we don't always see this. We see a lot of internal investigations. But we could also do things like understand that police work is difficult. If you look at the culture, you'll find a higher rate of alcoholism, a higher rate of divorce in this population. And we need to take responsibility for that. And we need to give them the mental health support that this group needs in doing a difficult job. We need to make sure that they get enough vacation time. We should look at shifts that they do. And we should give them ongoing training to deal with these kinds of issues in an effort to break down this negative culture when it exists in policing. Thanks for letting me make my comment. Merry Christmas to both of you.
Thank you for your call.
Great comment. I don't know if the situation you described about moving a prisoner into solitary was a Vermont story or not, but over the past 10, 15 years, there's been a series of steps taken by the legislature to provide some degree of protection to prisoners in Vermont institutions with serious psychiatric issues where they are not to be placed in solitary for extended periods of time without a review by a psychiatrist. This actually stems back to the death of an inmate by the name of David Carriger at St. Albans in 1993. Then Senator Luzzi was very helpful in trying to move corrections off of just warehousing inmates who had serious psych issues and refused medication. Another very difficult issue. So there have been some gains in that area. One thing I did say about the academy, I meant to say when I was talking about their progress in preparing officers and correctional officers, is that you come out of the academy with sort of the latest current thinking, and then you go out into the field, and it's less so now. I mean, evolutionary change is occurring, but you know, what you learn in the academy is one thing often, and then what happens when you're on the job is another. You know, the comment, that's great what you learned in the academy, but this is how we do it. I think that mindset's receding, but I think there's still some old thinking from tenured officers.
Let's go to Barry. Tom. Go ahead.
Let me just add one thing around. And I am a believer in organized labor and union representation, but it's often unions in these settings that make it difficult to hold officers, correctional officers, or police officers to account for misconduct, because they do have due process rights, and as they should. But there is a lot of resistance to whoever was talking about citizen hiring panels. Yes, it's generally hire for life, or at least 20 years. In Vermont, it's 20 years, and you're eligible for retirement. So once in, it's very hard to dislodge an officer. There's been some progress in that regard. In the old days, the only way you got decertified as an officer was conviction of a felony. And now it's conviction of a felony and failure to adequately complete training. There's no meaningful, in my view, meaningful decertification process, and something that I and others have been talking about is licensing law enforcement, like plumbers, barbers, acupuncturists, doctors, etc. So that if there is a disciplinary problem, that license can be revoked, so you're not transferring a problem to another agency.
Let's go to Barry. Tom, good morning.
Good morning. I'll make it quick. So we have the Department of Health that goes into restaurants with the theory of finding a problem before somebody gets sick. We have OSHA, or in the case of Vermont, VOSHA, that goes into businesses with the theory of finding job safety hazards and correcting them before somebody gets hurt or killed. Why couldn't a task force be formed where you have a group of people, a group of professionals that go undercover in these different communities from time to time, even once a year in different communities, and they interact with the police, maybe in a staged situation, domestic situation or whatever, to see how the police officer treats these people. So rather than being judged on the things that they're judged on now, number of tickets, number of arrests, and the other things that they do, many of which are positive, but rather than waiting for a problem to happen, because a police officer should not be a police officer, judge them and grade them on their interaction with the public to see if they have the skills to do it and to do it correctly and safely.
All right, let me hang on one second here before you answer that. Let me take a moment to remind our great listeners out there about our friends at Jet Service Envelope. If you're looking for an outstanding local printer, make it our friends at the Jet. Maybe you need some calendars printed up. Might want to hurry on that one because 2015's a-coming. And if you need some new letterhead, some new envelopes for your business for 2015, might want to make that happen too. Give them a call today at 229-9335, 229-9335. On the web at jetservice-envelope.com. You could also get some nice letterhead and envelopes for yourself, too. 229-9335 and on the web, jetservice-envelope.com.
You raised some important points, Tom, including the need for scenario training, which does occur. It is a component of basic training at the police academy. I believe it's also available on an in-service basis. There's very few in-service courses that are required annually. There's data master recertification for DUI. There's qualifying with a firearm. The bulk of the training happens at the academy, and I know scenario-based training is a component. I think your notion about evaluating officers' performance, not so much on production of tickets, prosecutions, etc., but how they maintain peace in the community has much to offer. Unfortunately, the criminal justice system traditionally has been built on numbers. Prosecutors have been known to charge, there was one case they charged 18 different violations of conditions of release down in Bennington County some years ago to justify more money. To me, that's not the outcomes we're looking for, much like in the healthcare debate or discussion where we're paying for procedures, not prevention. So, you know, the more hours that one spends in the community building positive relationships, to me, that's an important component of good police work and good performance. And I think your notion of having chiefs reward that behavior has much merit.
Can you train out the bias or not?
I think you can't eliminate it, but you can train people to be in touch with it and limit or negate how that bias impacts on behavior. I mean, we're all who we are. We all grew up in a racialized society. Certainly, I'm 63. When I was a young adult or a child, racism was in a very different stage in this country. Much more, there was still segregation. Those notions are inherent in who we are. I think over time, it's receding. Certainly true. I mean, you look at marriage equality, how quickly that's turned around. So evolutionarily, yes, there will be change. But in the meantime, it's critical that we understand our own biases and put them aside to do what it is we're hired to do.
I got an email. Somebody said that you're a white guilt racist.
I've been called a lot of things in my life. I don't quite know how to respond to that. I wouldn't say I'm a racist. I would say I'm racialized like the rest of us. White guilt, well, Knowing the history of this country, I don't feel good about how we got to where we are today. I don't think that's my motivating factor. I think my motivation in doing this work is to try to make things better going forward. So that's my response.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Mark. Always a pleasure.
And take the bag of coffee with you if haven't already given it to you. For my coffee company, coffee we give to our guests for coming in here to the studio. We'll take a quick commercial break. We'll be back. We'll take your phone calls the rest of the way. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll free, 877-291-8255. Back after this.
People are driving from West Lebanon, Burlington, St. Jay, even Hardwick and White River Junction. Jack Castellaneta, we're seeing Formula Nissans all over Vermont and New Hampshire.
That's because when you pay less for a new Nissan, it's worth the drive from anywhere to Formula Nissan in Barrie. And right now, during the holiday sales event, we've made it simpler than ever to drive a new Nissan, and simpler means cheaper.
Huge factory discounts, holiday bonus cash up to $4,500, or choose 0% financing for up to 72 months. Jack, with these year-end closeout deals, it really is the best time to drive a new Nissan.
Forget the sticker price, forget dealer markups, get the best Nissan price, plain and simple. That's why Formula Nissan is consistently ranked among the top Nissan dealers in Vermont.
Only at Formula Nissan, on the Barrie Montpelier Road, next to Pizza Hut, and at FormulaNissan.com.
Let us show you how easy it is to do business here.
Financing and approved credit, bonus cash on select vehicles. See dealer for details.
There is nothing quite like the feel of Vermont flannel. It's the feel of Vermont. Warm and cozy, Vermont flannel craftsmanship goes into every stitch. Crafted in the USA, many consider Vermont flannel clothing the best on the planet, as we do here at the Radio Vermont Group. Looking for a special, unique holiday gift for your employees and loyal customers? A made in the USA Vermont flannel gift is perfect. Quality beyond compare. A gift of comfort they'll feel good with for years to come and remember you for it. Vermont flannel clothing, sleepwear, and much more.
The Radio Vermont Group has had a tremendous response to the Vermont Flannel patchwork blankets and scarves that we've used. Visit VermontFlannel.com or locally visit one of their stores in East Barrie, Woodstock, on Church Street near Ben & Jerry's in Burlington, on Route 7 in Ferrisburg, and on Route 15 in Johnson. Also for the holidays at the University Mall.
Ho, ho, ho! Here's this season for Vermont Flannel gifts. The feel of Vermont. Makes me feel good. I'd be most happy to deliver Vermont Flannel anywhere. VermontFlannel.com.
Open 7 days a week.
Our next guest has been a major star since, well, the beginning of time, literally. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a warm welcome to The Sun. Sun, how do you manage to look so amazing at a zillion years old?
Clean living, Jimmy. And I keep very busy. Folks are now using my energy to power their lives, heat their homes, and fuel their cars.
You're producing like a kabazillion megawatts, right? That's crazy.
All in a day's work, Jimmy. In Vermont alone, I'm now providing the power to generate electricity for thousands and thousands of households.
Why, son, that's heartwarming.
Not just hearts, Jimmy. Heads, fingers, toes.
That's great, son. More fun with the sun after this break.
SunCommon helps Vermonters go solar with no upfront costs and a low fixed monthly payment. And with the best solar panels provided by industry leader SunPower, heating your home with solar power has never made more sense. Energy from the sun is clean, reliable, affordable, and SunCommon makes it easy to save money and go solar. Check out SunCommon.com.
Susan Posebut from Granite Hills Credit Union wishing you and yours a joyous holiday season and a prosperous new year. We are so pleased to be part of this great community and to support many local organizations and activities. In the past year, we have helped members become homeowners, reach goals with home equity loans, buy autos, and save money, all while enjoying competitive rates and friendly personal service. Take time to celebrate this happy time of year with friends and family.
Granite Hills Credit Union, located in Montpelier or Barrie, has been making holidays great for over 55 years. Give them a call, stop by, or visit their website at granitehills.org to learn how they can help you with your finances as you plan for the coming year. Member NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.
Two 844-1777 is our local number in central Vermont. You can also reach us on our toll-free lines at 877-291-8255. Moment of your time for our friends down the road at Red Hen Cafe and Bakery right off of Interstate 89, exit 9 in Middlesex. All sorts of great items that you can have for lunch today. And they always have two soups available, sandwiches available each and every day, too. And also, you could maybe do some last-minute shopping there, too. They have some great gift-giving ideas there, including a very nice selection of wines, including many from right here in Vermont. Also, a nice selection of Vermont beers as well, too. You know, not that I'm going to focus just on the booze here for you. Nice Panettone you could pick up for maybe a loved one, too. And, of course, you can always pick up one of those great pizza crusts and have that as part of your whole holiday tradition, too. Stop on down, see our friends at Red Hen Cafe and Bakery. They are right off of the interstate there. Hop, skip, and a jump. No big deal to get off the interstate and right back on. And you'll be a-blazing on your way before you know it. And you'll find Red Hen Cafe and Bakery. It's right on Route 2, so no big wild adventure into the backwoods of Middlesex. And again, Red Hen Cafe and Bakery, they open the doors at 7 a.m. They on 8 on Sundays, and they close at 6, except for Monday, which is today when they close at 4. So stop on down there and make it soon. 244-1777, that's our local number in central Vermont. Toll-free 877-291-8255. Any further thoughts and comments on what our guests had to say today? We spoke last hour with Betsy Bishop of the Vermont Chamber, expressing relief that Governor Shumlin did not go forward with his financing plan that he had said that he would be presenting to the legislature in January. Whoa, what a piece. Paul Hines of 7 Days really ripping the governor a new one, saying for all intents and purposes that Governor Shumlin has been riding the rocket of health care reform with no, just for political purposes, with real no intent to actually implement it. Very, very interesting piece. If we get time, I'll get to some of what he had to say on that front. Maybe you have some thoughts and comments on that. Are there any of you out there that believe that this was all just a big sham on the part of the governor, that he never really had any intention to do it, that he spent 4 years promoting single-payer health care with no intent to really make it happen? Let me share with you. This, I thought, was one of the wilder stories over the weekend and this morning. Not quite sure what the implications of this one might be. Maybe you do, too. But there was a story out of Buenos Aires down in Argentina where there was an orangutan that has been held in a zoo that they have ordered to be freed and transferred to a sanctuary. After the court recognized the ape, listen to this phrase here, a non-human person. Huh. How's that, huh? A non-human person. That's what an orangutan is legally been described as here. So here's what happened. There was a 29-year-old orangutan at the Buenos Aires Zoo, and in November, Sandra, by the way, the name, in November, a group of animal rights groups challenged in, they filed a habeas corpus petition, which is, as you know, usually more used for the detention of a person, somebody actually who's in prison. So there was this landmark ruling that came down. The Association of Officials and Lawyers for Animal Rights, AFIDA, argued that the ape had sufficient cognitive functions and should not be treated as an object. According to a story in today's Huffington Post, here's what happened next. By the way, you knew that orangutan is a word from the Malay and Indonesian languages that means forest man. You knew that already, didn't you? So here's what the ruling was. In a landmark ruling that could pave the way for more lawsuits, I'm just thinking, you know, the whale down at, you know, SeaWorld. Oh, my goodness. I mean, you know, this could really open up a, oh, here's a good one. This could open up a can of freed worms, couldn't it? In a landmark ruling that could pave the way for more lawsuits, the Association of Officials and Lawyers for Animal Rights argued the ape had sufficient cognitive functions and should not be treated as an object. Mark, you just read that. Okay, here we go. The court agreed Sandra, born into captivity in Germany before being transferred to Argentina 2 decades ago. Gosh, that's a route that sounds sort of familiar, isn't it? Germany to Argentina. Deserved the basic rights of a non-human person. Quote, this opens the way not only for other great apes, but also for other sentient beings which are unfairly and arbitrarily deprived of their liberty in zoos, circuses, water parks, and scientific laboratories. Whoa. The Daily La Nation newspaper quoted AFIDA lawyer Paul Juan Padre as saying, I already told you what orangutan means. Sandra's case is not the first time activists have sought to use habeas corpus writ to secure the release of wild animals from captivity. A U.S. court this month tossed out a similar bid for freedom of Tommy, the chimpanzee, privately owned in New York State, ruling the chimp was not a person entitled to the rights and protections afforded by habeas corpus. In 2011, the animal rights group People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, filed a lawsuit against marine park operator SeaWorld, alleging 5 wild captured orca whales were treated like slaves. A San Diego court dismissed the case. I have to tell you, I've been to some of these shows down in the Miami area. Oh, my Lord. You know, these enormous whales in what seems like way too small a pool. I mean, you know, it kind of reminded me if, we were all, like, confined to a bathtub for the entire day. But I participated in it, and I have to say, I felt, you know, maybe you call it white guilt or whatever you want to call it, human guilt maybe, non-human guilt or human-related guilt. In any case, so that case in San Diego was appealed. There is an appeal period on this case at a Buenos Aires. The spokesperson for the zoo declined to comment. The zoo's head of biology told La Nación that orangutans were by nature calm, solitary animals which come together only to mate and care for their young. The head of biology said, quote, when you don't know the biology of a species, to unjustifiably claim it suffers abuse, is stressed or depressed, is to make one of man's most common mistakes, which is to humanize animal behavior. We'll take a quick break. Back after this.
I can't believe it's been 2 years. Hi, this is Steve Sace from the new McMahon Chevy Buick in Morrisville, Vermont.
And I'm Ed Dever, sales manager at McMahon. That's right. It's officially been 2 years since we teamed up to form the new McMahon Chevy Buick, and it's been awesome. Our goal to become Vermont's number one Chevy truck dealer has us stocking more new Chevys and Buicks on our 2 lots than ever before.
And with the addition of McMahon's Import Corner, our used vehicle sales are up over 500%.
Shazam!
Ed, it's not your turn yet, man.
Sorry, but 500%? Wow.
To celebrate a 2-year anniversary for December, buy or lease any new in-stock truck and receive a $500 holiday gift card. See dealer for details.
We're stocking tons of new Silverados, 1500s and 2500s, many with plows ready to go. And the completely new redesigned Colorados are rolling in. Check our inventory out online and like us on Facebook for more of our crazy offers.
Great deals and a $500 holiday gift card only at the new McMahon Chevy Buick on the corner of Route 15 and Route 100 in Morrisville. We make deals the other guys won't.
Chevy, find new roads.
I love Hunger Mountain Co-op because it's about people, not just products. I'm Paula Kyman from Middlesex, Vermont, and I've been a member owner of Hunger Mountain Co-op since 1996.
Hey, a moment of your time for our friend Mike Rusolop at the tailor shop in Stowe's Lower Village, who loves all of you out there, but is not doesn't want to see you this week because he'd rather just wish you a very happy holiday and look forward to seeing you in the new year. If you do happen to get some items this week, maybe get a nice sport coat, maybe get a nice pair of pants, something that doesn't quite fit right. You can always bring your items on up to Mike Russell at the Tailor Shop in Stowe's Lower Village when he's, of course, open for business. He'll be open again starting on the first of the year. So we encourage you to keep those items in mind and put them aside. And then when you need to bring them on up to Mike, you can do that. Where is Mike Roussel? He is at the tailor shop in Stowe's Lower Village. It is right on the right-hand side of Route 100 when you head up from the Waterbury area here. And we encourage you to stop on in there on Wednesdays, Thursdays, and on Fridays. And again, he will be open after the first of the year. But another great year at the tailor shop. Thank you to all of you that have taken advantage of the 50-plus years of experience that Mike Roussel brings to each and every job. Just one other quick story I want to mention here before we wrap up for today. Coming up tomorrow on the program, too, I'm looking forward to be our discussion. We'll be chatting with Senator Philip Baruth, who is one of the four people that put together a very nice presentation a week or so back up in Burlington at the Winter Tales. Phil has a really nice story about how he and his wife celebrate the Swedish traditions of Christmas. So we'll talk about that coming up on the program tomorrow. Very interesting story out of South Korea this morning. I don't know what, you know, it sounds like a lot of people inside North Korea are working on computers on a daily basis. Here's the latest out of there. Now, before I tell you this story, apparently nothing to worry about yet. But there's a nuclear power plant in South Korea where the computer system has been hacked. And they believe that it's from the north there. Apparently this involves, at this point, only what they call non-critical data. It's sort of like, I guess, a non-human there. And they say there's no risk to safety. There are 23 atomic reactors in South Korea. And North Korea is apparently behind these, mounting cyber attacks against industrial and social targets. They say that part of the reason that they went after this nuclear power plant is as payback for accusations by our country that North Korea was involved with that hacking assault that happened on Sony Pictures. So we'll keep you apprised on that one. Wow. You know, the people that talk about cyber war as really being the future and that military and weapons are really not going to be what the future's all about may have themselves a case really right here. Thank you very much for joining us on the program this morning. Please have a safe day out there and do come back and join us same time, same place tomorrow right here on these great radio stations. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugarbush, FM 96.5 in Barrie and Montpelier, 101.9 in the Northeast Kingdom, and the flagship AM 550 WDEV Waterbury Montpelier News is coming your way next.
Radio News. I'm Rita Foley. Police around the country are being warned to wear bulletproof vests.